Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Bar Rescue's John Taffer joins us. Give us a lot of insights about the old days down at the Troubadour nightclub, managing that place and all the big celebs and bands that came through there, and Barney's Beanery back in the day. So much interesting stories with him and the news coming up as well. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Celebrate getting your COVID-19 vaccination, but do not post your vaccine card on social media. It contains personal info, your name, birth date, things that criminals want to steal your identity. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet in an instant. Cyber criminals could harm your finances, your credit, and your reputation. Good thing there's LifeLock. That's right. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert and you'll have access to a dedicated restoration specialist. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours, yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam for 25% off. The Adam Carolla Show presents John Taffer's birthday cocktail party for November 7th. Let's see who's invited. The Polish-French scientist who discovered radium and the first woman to win the Nobel Prize, Marie Curie. A Marxist revolutionary political theorist and founder of the Red Army, Leon Trotsky. American Baptist evangelist, the Reverend Billy Graham. Canadian-born folk singer, most famous for the song Clouds, Joni Mitchell joins the party. Peter from the Brady Bunch, Christopher Knight. Pro wrestler King Kong Bundy. Former Navy SEAL and the subject of the movie Lone Survivor, Marcus Luttrell. And the singer with one name, Lord. Oh, Lord. John Taffer is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Good to see you, my friend.
Good to be here, but I'm bummed, Adam. When I met Henry Winkler, I got a one-handed hand.
Oh, single hand.
I feel completely slighted at this moment.
Yeah, the two-handers, the best handshake Winkler hands out. Hey, Bar Rescue, by the way, new episodes Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific on Paramount Network. We'll talk about the 200th episode coming up. I guess we kind of teased Vegas's official reopening. What does that mean?
Well, we're back. I mean, Memorial Day weekend was sold out. I mean, you couldn't even get a room in Vegas.
Wow.
When I drive down the strip, the streets are full again. The restaurants are packed. There's no mask restrictions here anymore. So there's no distancing restrictions. You walk through the casino, it's busy. Everybody is unmasked. And it's pretty darn exciting. I went to the Golden Knights playoff hockey game last night here in Vegas. 18,000 people filled to capacity, no masks, no spacing. Everything was open. Even a mascot took his mask off, which to me symbolized the end of this damn
thing. He's got mask right in the name.
Yeah, it was so funny. There should be, I don't know how they can work this out, but I'm watching the playoffs. I'm watching the Vegas Golden Knights. Sorry, they featured Wayne Newton in the clip I was looking at, I missed you, but it was packed to capacity, right?
Yes,
and
completely.
So they're covering the NHL playoffs. Well, the next series, they go to Montreal.
Does it look different?
Montreal's, they're playing in a 100% empty arena. It's 100% empty in Canada. And first off, I don't know if there's a third series going on, but I got the bends. I was like, I need some half-capacity arena to get me from what was going on in Vegas, which is full-capacity bedlam, to Montreal. I think it was Montreal Canadiens. And it was completely empty. But then I thought to myself, what the fuck is that pussy Trudeau doing? Like, does he watch this? Does he wonder, like, are all these people in Vegas going to die? Like, what happens when nothing happens? How long do we keep the one... And by the way, as a fan of sports in general, watching guys play playoff hockey with all the stands just sort of cordoned off, they're not even cordoned off, they have banners and plastic pulled over them and it's coverings. It kind of looks like walking into the hotel at in the movie The Shining. You know what I mean? It's sort of like there's slip covers over everything. It's like when you'd see the old haunted house and have the sheet over the table. Right. Like, it doesn't feel like playoffs are going on. It's got to suck for the guys playing.
Yeah, imagine no one's beating on the glass.
They pump in the sounds of the audience.
Oh.
Which makes it even stranger. So the room is empty, but they pump in the sounds of the audience. They play music in the arena as if the audience is still there. It's really strange when you hear it, but you don't see it.
And then you got here, we had the Clippers playing the Mavericks. So you'd go to Texas and it was full. And then you come to the Clippers game and they have cardboard cutouts of cartoon characters just all courtside. Is there something going on? Is there a different strain in Texas or a different strain of COVID in Nevada that doesn't exist in Canada or California? Are we just fucking colossal pussies? Like, what is going on? When can we the fuck open?
Sorry. I think it's a different strain of politician, maybe, in these places, rather than a different strain of the virus. You're exactly right, Adam. I mean, what is the difference between a hockey arena in Texas or a basketball arena and one in L.A.? It's really... We've learned the lesson that I've learned during this thing is pay much more attention to local politics when you vote.
Yeah, it's
interesting. Because really it was the local politicians that caused all of these shutdowns and all of these business crises. The federal government really didn't have the authority to do that.
Well,
and that's why you see such a huge difference in California than you do other states as far as the detrimental impact upon business.
Well, like I said, when they show those highlights and they're just two-minute roll-in segments, you go from Vegas to Canada. It looks like they're playing in an arena that's under renovation or something. It kind of looks like what it looks like when they have those like club games or celebrity fundraising games in the off season or something.
I just looked it up, but Montreal and Las Vegas have almost the same exact vaccination rate. So there's almost no difference. They're both the mid-40s.
Well, I guess we'll see.
So there's no reason for Montreal to be treated
differently. There's no major difference.
Or we need to shut down Vegas, either way.
No, don't do that.
So you rolled the dice, you stared death in the eye, and you went out to the local hockey arena.
I did.
How is this impacted? And I want to get into that, but at first I'm looking down and I forgot about some of your highlights, like working as a bartender for Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood in 1973. Jim Morrison had died by then, but there must have been a cavalcade of celebrities hanging out in that place back when.
There were. Copley used to be there all the time. Supertramp used to come in all the time. Stallone would come in sometimes. We had quite a crowd back in those days. Barney's was very cool back in the late 70s and the years that I was there.
Now it's kind of fratty.
Yeah, now it's a little fratty, and they've opened up other locations. But it was a really very famous place. Most British musicians, when they got off the plane, came straight to Barney's in those days, and their suitcases would sit in front. That's how hot we were. But there are some great stories. You know, Janis Joplin died in Barney's.
What?
And they in the bathroom in Barney's, and they dragged her body to what was then the Tropicana Hotel, which was owned by Sandy Koufax down on Santa Monica Boulevard. And
really?
She was sighted dead in that hotel room. Jeez. But actually, she almost died in Barney's, and then they dragged her to the hotel.
So, oh, my God. Yeah, a pretty rich history.
Worst sex John's ever had.
Hell of a drink he mixed her.
So is that really true? So Barney's is on or off of Santa Monica.
Like Holloway.
It's on a side street.
Yeah, it's on a side street right off of Santa Monica, right? And Sandy Koufax owned the hotel?
No. There was a hotel. It's since gone. And this goes back to the days that I ran the Troubadour, too, which was right down the street. There was a hotel there, an outside corridor hotel called the Tropicana. And it was just a little Holiday Inn-ish type of hotel. And Sandy Koufax was the investor who owned that hotel at that time. And even when I ran the Troubadour, all sorts of musicians would hang out in the Tropicana Hotel at that time. I remember Stevie Nicks was there for a little while. I remember a bunch of others who were there.
So
Chucky Weiss lived there for a while and a bunch of others.
And then you went kind of up the hill a little to the Troubadour, right?
I did.
And what kind of
on Santa Monica?
Oh, is it on Santa Monica?
Yeah.
Oh, it's down the street on
toward
Santa Monica. I was going up to Gazzari's or something on Sunset Strip. Yeah, you went down past Dantana's.
Yes.
Moving on.
That's right. My favorite. I asked my wife to marry me in Dantana's.
Oh, wow.
Fucking Dantana's is awesome. Old school bartenders, old school waiters.
Yep. That's the best.
And Phil Spector loves that place. Then also. So what kind of bands were going through? I mean, I'm looking at 1978 Troubadour.
78-9. So when I was running the Troubadour, Fear, Black Flag, Adam Ant.
Punk bands.
Right. We had that whole punk thing going on. At the same time, the Knack, you know, the good boy bands, the Knack,
right,
and the Rubber City Rebels and all that stuff was going on. But when I took over the Troubadour, Adam, there were 3 inches of water on the Troubadour floor in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the money to fix it because the owner, then Doug Weston, would come to the club every evening and empty out the safe and use the proceeds for recreational activities. So we never had the money to take care of anything. So when I took over the Troubadour, I got pallets, wood pallets, and I threw them on a floor and we walked on the wood pallets with Lake Troubadour underneath
us. Like the city of Venice.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any money to fix anything. And we put together back then the Troubadour 25th anniversary. And everybody came back. Elton John, Jackson Browne, Linda Ronstadt, George Carlin. I mean, they all came back. And we made enough money during that 25th anniversary week to fix up the Troubadour. And now it survived to another generation. But
wow,
those were crazy days. Everybody who worked there was a musician.
Were you able to catch a lot of the acts, or were you running around too much?
No, I saw a lot of the acts.
Who stood out back then? And by the way, you said Fear played there. Fear was the punk band who had a couple of hits, but New York's All Right, if you like saxophones, is my favorite one because it doesn't make sense. Yeah. And the lead singer is Lee Ving, who had an acting career as well.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Lee Ving, the lead singer of Fear. And I don't know if it was his real name is Lee Ving or Leaving.
Oh.
But... I mean, it's hard to tell because I met a woman named Shanda, and her family was the Lear family of Lear Jets fame, and her name was Shanda Lear.
Now, so you never know.
She wasn't punk rock. That was her name.
Gina,
I know a girl
Clue
named Crystal Light.
Crystal Light, like, yeah, Judith's sister.
He's the butler in Clue, right?
Yeah, he's Mr. Bodie.
Mr. Bodie.
Oh,
Mr.
His
Bodie,
name is Lee James Jude Capallaro.
Capallaro.
Paisan, but the Ving.
So, Adam,
yeah,
I want to answer the question you just asked me because it's a great answer.
Yes.
What band really stuck out from the Troubadour and stuff in those days? There was a band that came into the Troubadour that nobody had ever heard of, and they played a song. And this song went on and on and on for 45 minutes. It was the most incredible thing I had ever seen. In all my years of working in nightclubs, I never saw what this song did in a room. People stood on tables. They went fucking nuts during this song, so much so that the 3-minute song would go on for like 45 minutes. And it had a bass riff to it that was incredibly memorable. And when I tell you what song and what band it is, you're going to be shocked. The song was My Sharona, and the band was The Knack. And when The Knack came to the Troubadour and played My Sharona, I had never seen anything like it. Da-da-da-da-da-da. That song just drove an audience insane. And The Knack wound up getting one of the largest advances in the recording industry at that time. And it was very much because of the reaction of that song in the live room. And you wouldn't think that would be the one, Adam, but it was.
Well, it's funny because I have a relationship with this song because
you performed it too, or he had it performed for you.
I worked at I used to live in North Hollywood, and across the street was Colfax Elementary School. And Colfax Elementary School had a skinny, little, sort of frizzy-haired, 20-something-year-old white guy janitor. And he used to sit and, like, meditate out in the yard and stuff. And I lived across the street, and it was just a chain-link fence. And I used to hop it all the time to play basketball with him. And this guy, whose name was Cliff, he used to play basketball with us. He was a little guy, always good spirits and kind of fun. And then one time his brother came to come play with us. And his brother was described as a musician who pre-Knack, and no one had heard of him, and he was in a band called The Knack, and who gave a shit. And he was a super nice guy. And a couple years later, maybe a year later or something, The Knack just fucking exploded and went nuts. And that was Cliff's brother. We found out his name before.
Cliff Avere.
What's his last name?
Avere. A-V-E-R-R-E.
Avere. And his brother was like the guitar player or something for The Knack.
Yeah.
And they kind of look the same. But 3 or 4 days ago, I was driving around and this song came on the radio. And I think we kind of categorize it as kind of a novelty song, you know. Because
one hit wonder.
Kind of one hit wonder. Although the album was really good. The album had a bunch, bunch of hits on it. And songs you guys have probably heard before.
Sure.
Kind of Rick Springfield-esque in that you think he's got the Jesse's Girl. But there's a bunch of other cuts on the album that are actually good as well.
Love Somebody.
But I agree. But I was listening, Tool Tune, but I was listening to this just driving around the other day. And I thought, the guitar, when this song kind of kicked in, it started to jam. Like,
oh,
it was good.
Seeing it live for the first time?
We'll get right to it, but I'll play it for a second. Like, you don't think of it as a rocking song. You think of it as kind of a, oh, this is the beginning of the 80s song. But when they kind of get going here, I think it's this part. We'll turn it up.
We've
got to get hold of Cliff one of these days. This part. Hey, Chris. Listen close. I was like going, hey, this song kind of rocks.
Matt just told me that his grandfather wrote this song for
us.
Oh,
I knew it.
I believe it was written by a guy by the name of Doug Feiger, who actually read The Knack back then. I have some pretty crazy pictures of him in the dressing room with the troubadour from those days, which I won't go into the details of. But running the troubadour was an amazing thing, Adam, because of all the people that came through it back in those years. I remember Pat Benatar when she was starting out.
Oh,
had no money.
Man.
We had to advance her money to stay in a hotel. She came down from San Francisco to play, and it was so many of those kinds of stories. Tim Harden, who wrote If I Was a Carpenter, used to work as a dishwasher.
You my lady.
Yep. Tim was a friend, worked as a dishwasher there, but it was a remarkable place. People, there were no rules in the troubadour. You could pick up a whole side of beef and just take it home with you.
Wow.
That's the way it was in those days.
Well, as I always say, best time in American history, pre-AIDS, mid-Coke.
Mid-Coke.
You could do whatever you want. No AIDS, plenty of Coke.
And this is the
Do you remember,
of,
Adam, in 1978 when Valley Girls would wear cellophane pants?
Yes.
What?
Cellophane?
Yes. For a while, Valley Girls wore cellophane pants, and they would come and they'd hang out at the troubadour and stuff. Mm. And we knew we were doing really well, Adam, because their pants would steam up.
What do you got, Brian?
I got a great piece of trivia about that song that probably nobody here knows, and it will once again prove my Quentin Tarantino fanship. That was the original song in the script. He wrote it into the script for Pulp Fiction for the basement scene where Marcellus gets raped by Zed and the spider.
Oh, really?
Did they not give him the rights?
He wrote it into the script with a quote. He later said, it's got a great butt-fucking beep.
Mm.
Or beat.
Well, what happened?
And apparently he tried to get the rights, and apparently the story is one of the guys, the band was into it. One of the songwriters, one of the guys in the band was like become religious. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I converted or whatever. And it's like, no, I'm not into that. So he went with this is the song we all know.
Butt-fucking
beat. It was supposed to be My Sharona.
Huh.
Written into the script.
Would have been better with My Sharona.
I wonder what Cliff's brother's up to.
He lives in Utah.
maybe it's him.
Yeah.
Connect you guys. And Brian, Matt Fondelier, literally 10 seconds before he said that, nobody else would know this. He came in an engineer and told us that story.
Interesting.
Matt Fondelier.
So from the old days to the new day. So I guess bars and restaurants, or bars especially, got hit the hardest with all the restrictions, right? Because the restaurants were doing takeout and people were eating outside, but bars got
And you could only have a drink if you had food.
Right.
So
and you couldn't sit at the bar either.
Right.
So that was an issue as well. But you know what? Places like Florida were crazy. For example, in Florida, if you were a bar that served food, you couldn't open. But if you were a restaurant that had a bar, you could. So all the restaurants just became bars at 10 o'clock at night. It was incredibly unfair to the bar owners. And every state has stories like this. Adam, I just did the last season of Bar Rescue. And during this last season of Bar Rescue, I really saw for the first time how this impacted people. And, you know, we've all talked about restaurants are closing and blah, blah, blah. There's a family who lost their house 3 days before I got there. They had four boys under 10 years old sleeping on a wooden floor above the restaurant. They lost everything, you know, and it's become so human for me during this season of Bar Rescue because I've seen how it's impacted individuals so much. You know, they talked about 30-40%, and I'm one of the ones who've been very statistically involved in this on all the news shows and stuff. We're going to finish up losing about 18% of the restaurants and about 25% of the bars across the country as a result of this thing. And
I'm shocked.
When you think about the fact that those are family fortunes, right? And families who've invested everything into these businesses, it's devastating.
It's shocking that it's that low. Like, I thought it'd be a lot more, frankly.
Well, most
people forecasted more, but that's where it sort of landed.
Wow, that's crazy.
And
at least it's a little better than we thought. But now, think of this. You know those little ketchup packets that we get? Well, during COVID, we all had to use those ketchup packets because you couldn't use bottles of ketchup because of COVID sanitation. Those used to cost 7 cents. They went up to 11 cents. Then they went up to 17 cents. Then they went up to 30 cents. Last week, they were 40 cents each, and you can't get them.
Oh. Wow.
I have a friend owns a lobster house in New York. Lobster used to cost him $9 a pound. It's now $21 a pound.
Yeah.
A brisket went from $9 to $22. So restaurants are facing a really big problem now, guys. We can't make any money. The food is so expensive, we can't raise our prices by 30-40%. But our prices have been raised by 70-80%. So we're not out of the woods. Just because customers are coming and some of the restrictions are lifted, we're really screwed as it comes to buying our products, and we can't even get them in most cases.
Well, what about passing along? By the way, when you're talking about ketchup packets, you reminded me of my grandfather talking about stamps. They used to be 18 cents, and they went to 22 cents. Now they're 27 cents. All right, calm down, Grandpa. You send two letters a year.
Oh,
you'll make it.
Forever stamps are 58 now.
But so I used to be in the building trades. And the thing that's gone up 150% is all building materials, especially dimensional lumber. You know, plywood is $90 a sheet, used to be $38 a sheet. Like, so in the building world, the supplies have gone up insane amount. And if you're a builder, you just have to pass it along. You just go, well, each house, I think, is an average of $30,000 more nationally for single family house. You just have to tack the $30,000 onto the bid. Right. When are restaurants going to do that, or why don't they do that?
Well, there's a whole position of price sensitivity. It's a little scary, Adam, to just print a new menu and raise your prices by 30-40%. That's devastating.
What if we all agreed on the right day to do it? Because I feel like if everyone did it on the same day, it would work.
Boy, do I agree with you. That's the problem, is I do it and the guy across the street doesn't.
Right.
So I get killed in that scenario. So there has to be some understanding in the community that this does have to happen. By the way, I'm with you on a remodeling. During the Bar Rescue season, we couldn't get lumber. It was about 110% higher than normal. But stuff like hinges, door locks, hardware, joists. I mean, all of this stuff, we can't even get it, Adam. It's unbelievable how what kind of supply side problems we're having.
Yeah, they're talking. I was looking at some cars over at Galpin Ford out here in Van Nuys. Galpin has this huge multi-acreage sort of storage lot behind the facility, and it's just city block after city block. And the guy was like, There's normally 10,000 cars here. There's 2,000 now. We can't get the chip.
That's exact. That's I almost didn't get a car. It's not just cars. It's like not Nintendo. It's like all the gaming systems. It's cars. It's a microchip that nobody can get.
Yeah. Even coffee machines use it,
right?
Et cetera. I'm going up to Montana for a couple of weeks for vacation. I wanted to rent a car up there. So we're calling all the rental car companies. They have no cars. And the reason why they have no cars is they can't get new cars because of the chip. And in their business plan, they have to sell their existing cars when they get 20,000 miles on them. So they're still selling the old cars when they can't get new cars. So they have no cars.
Yeah, my,
I've been hearing about this.
My friend, Matt DeAndrea, I do CarCast with. Leased his mom a RAV4 Toyota like a year and a half ago. Toyota called her and said, "You want? Can we have the car back? Or you want to sell it back? Are you done with the car? Like, we'll get it back. Can we get it back from you?" Yeah. So there's some long lasting implications here. Shit. Yeah.
I bought this 19-foot Airstream van, which I bought during the pandemic because it's the size of a car, but it's like a little camper van. And you can stand up in it, and it's got a bathroom and a little kitchen and a bed and everything. And I bought this thing. I was supposed to get it in 3 months. It took me 9 months to get it. And I've had offers for twice what I paid for it.
Yeah.
Because you can't get one. So I'm not sure how quickly this goes away, guys. You know, I think we're going to have some supply side pain for quite a while. And we're all going to have to absorb some of these additional costs in some way.
Again, the new episode, 200th episode of Bar Rescue is going to be on the Paramount Network. This Sunday, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. Hey, John, you want to hang with us and do the news?
Sure.
All right. We'll do that right after a word from our friends at Apartments.com. Apartments.com. Most people know that Apartments.com is the most popular place to find a place. That's because Apartments.com has the most rental listings and most ways to find them, thanks to some of the most powerful tools like 3D virtual tours. So you're most likely to find your most right place, which most everyone would agree is good news, unless you're weird and prefer to have less than most. Make the most obvious move for your next move and use Apartments.com, the most popular place to find a place.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff face on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Meet news with Gino Grad.
News with Gina Grad.
Well, there was a lot to talk about and then suddenly sort of not a lot to talk about. But Logan Paul surprised critics by staying on his feet for all eight rounds of the exhibition match against retired Hall of Fame boxer Floyd Mayweather Jr. The New York Times reported that ringside fans in Miami were craving a knockout. They began to boo at the end of the final round. A winner could be declared only if there was a knockout. Huge payout, though, for everybody. Mayweather may have earned as much as $100 million. Logan Paul took home an estimated $10 million. And YouTuber Logan Paul entered the ring with a distinct advantage: height, age, weight, arm reach. 44-year-old Mayweather complimented his opponent after saying he was better than I thought he was going to be. He knew how to use his weight. He tied me up. And he said at some point, like, I like kind of scrapping with the young guys. Here's a clip of what looks like Jake Paul getting knocked out but still standing.
Find the poster from the promo, Max Pata. Sorry, here it is.
So watch this. And just sort of noodle. But
yeah,
he technically didn't go down.
Yeah, Floyd is way too slick and Paul's throwing big looping stuff. He's never going to touch Floyd. But
there's a reason why Floyd's team is called the money team.
Right.
That's right.
But Floyd was pretty polite afterwards.
There's just a huge size difference. Look, tell me if it bothers you guys. There's a six-inch height difference between the two. The promo poster has Floyd the exact same height, maybe a skosh taller.
Don't like it.
Now, if you look at the poster, Floyd is bald, but is it Jake Paul?
Yeah, Logan.
Logan Paul. Logan Paul's got the hair. Floyd may be a little taller in the poster.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is Look, Mike Tyson was 3.5-4 inches shorter than almost everyone whose ass he kicked. You know what I mean? Reflected in the poster.
Oh, sure. Right.
Just a, or okay, you don't want to do 6 inches in the poster. Give me 2.5 inches in the poster, but you
meet
can't
halfway.
Have him stand
show
on an apple box.
Show the fact that he's smaller. Well, show the fact that he's smaller.
And Brian, you'll know what I'm talking about. There's plenty of Tom Cruise examples, most glaringly in Vanilla Sky when he's looking eye to eye with Cameron Diaz in every scene.
Who towers over him. Yeah.
The poster, just slide him down a little because really that's the fight. If Floyd Mayweather is a cruiserweight, the same as Paul, who is cruiserweight. So light heavyweight's like 176, and then cruiserweight goes to like 187 or 190 or something. Then you start getting into heavyweight past cruiserweight. So if you have a light or middleweight guy fighting a cruiserweight, that's the draw.
Right.
Because if Floyd is walking around in 190 pounds, and that's what he fought at, then he would destroy Paul.
Right.
Because the advantage is Floyd's going to the Boxing Hall of Fame, and the guy's fighting has 6 inches and 35 pounds on him and 20 years.
Right.
So maybe this could be competitive, which it sort of turned out to be. But
it's misleading.
Reflect.
I think the poster would have been cool if they were 6 inches right next to each other with Mayweather looking up.
Yes. Right.
Right. And Paul looking down. That would have been a really interesting poster. That's a fight I would have been more eager to see.
Right, but instead they made him the same, even though one guy's 0-1, the other guy's 50-0.
We recorded a show last night when this fight was happening, and Gina and I got here first, and Gina goes, is that fight tonight? Yeah. And I look at her and I go, it's a bad sign that we're not sure.
Yeah.
Like, they're looking at a really good job promoting it.
Right. Yeah.
Because I had no idea it was until it was happening. I was like, oh, that fight's tonight?
About a 35-pound weight difference and 6 inches. So that's what made it good. Made it good.
We have a new apology. A new celebrity apology that needs to be acknowledged. Last week, and I didn't get into it then because it was a non-story, but now we have an apology. The unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt actress, Ellie Kemper, received some unwanted attention. I won't use the word backfire if I can help it. Or outrage when photos surfaced of her being crowned the Queen of Love and Beauty at the Veiled Prophet Ball in 1999. It's now called the Fair St. Louis. Apparently, the Veiled Prophet organization was originally co-founded in the 1800s by a Confederate officer, only permitted white people up until 1979. And Kemper addressed the situation in a statement on Instagram. And here are some highlights because it was super long. But here's just a couple of the sentences. Hi, guys. When I was 19 years old, I decided to participate in a debutante ball in my hometown. The century-old organization that hosted the debutante ball had an unquestionably racist, sexist, and elitist past. I was not aware of the history at the time, but ignorance is no excuse. I was old enough to have educated myself before getting involved.
Oh, you're going to the cornfield.
That's not it. I'm going to give you the ending now. Skip a bunch of the middle. I want to apologize to the people I've disappointed, and I promise that moving forward, I will listen, continue to educate myself, and use my privilege in support of the better society I think we're capable of becoming.
Ugh. Scary.
And you know what's ironic about her, about Ellie Kemper? I heard an interview with her at some point. She's not on Twitter. Like, she's like, oh, I don't want to get involved. Like, it's too crazy out there. And, like, don't worry. We'll find you. We'll come to you.
Do we expect more of 19-year-old, like, debutantes?
In
like,
St. Louis?
Yeah, do we expect them to have a really...
Don't answer that question or you won't host The Bachelor.
That's a good point.
But it's kind of like saying, 47 years ago, they held a Klan rally at this roller rink you want to hang out at. And it's like, how the fuck am I supposed to know what they did here 50 years? All she knew is she wanted to be queen of the sock hop, and no one said anything.
Yes, to that point, how easy was it to research that shit in 1999? Yeah. Keep in mind, the internet was in its infancy.
Well, and that's the other thing. In 1999, if they weren't letting other races in, something to think about. They had been letting everybody in for 20 years when she got crowned the debutante.
But also, why would one research anything? Like, the guy used to manage the hot dog on a stick at the airport was a racist. I should have looked into it before I got that fucking lemonade.
Yeah.
Fuck all you pussies.
But that's
people
what I'm saying.
It
wasn't even happening.
I know. Like, and also,
did you hear what's going on with the birds?
The Birds, the band?
Yes. Apparently now there's a motion that about 80 birds have been named after people who have racist backgrounds.
Oh, really?
So now there's a movement to rename these birds to give them new names that don't have racist backgrounds. You know, it's getting to a point now. Adam, what if the microphone you're talking on didn't hire black people 100 years ago?
You never know. I should research.
Are you a racist for buying that microphone?
I'm
going to
educate
today?
Myself. Look, again, here's the good news. We're out of racism. We're officially out of actual racism.
We're drilling deep.
If we got to get into the birds and Kimmy Schmidt and all that, then we're done. We're out. Point.
It's a good sign. Speaking of being out of problems, Meghan Markle had another baby. The name was announced. Everybody went crazy because they love talking about these people. But there's a problem. The name of the newborn is Lilibet Diana Mountbatten Windsor. Okay, fine. Moving on. Apparently, that is very rude to call her Lilibet. It's very rude toward Queen Elizabeth II. I will tell you. Actually, I won't tell you. Royal biographer Angela Levin suggested the decision was bad because that was a private nickname within the family. Here's a little bit of what she's talking about on Good Morning Britain.
It was a very private nickname from her husband, who hasn't been dead for very long. Prince Charles would never dream of referring to his mother as Lilibet.
Well, you wouldn't refer to your own mother by a nickname.
No, but I mean, he wouldn't talk about my mother. He wouldn't say my mother, the Queen. He's never used it. And it was given to her by King George V, her grandfather, who was making a joke that she couldn't say Elizabeth when she was very small. He'd say, "What's your name?" And she said, "Lilibet." So that's why he called her that.
Let's contrast the royal family to the Corollas. Hey, Dad, how come I don't have a middle name? I don't know.
Huh? You don't?
Hand me a beer. Done. No. Next, turn the page.
Yeah, but we love calling you Little Lilibet.
Hey, Dad, I'm thinking of naming my son Fuck Douche. Yeah, knock yourself out.
Oh, you got a son?
You know, it's a common thread in Mean Old Bitches. My grandma had a nickname we weren't allowed to call her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she had a nickname we weren't allowed to say to her face.
What was it?
Shash.
What's Shash? Really?
I don't know. It must be a Lebanese thing.
Okay.
But yeah, don't call her that to her face. Her name is Marie, but if you call her Shash, you're in trouble.
It's so funny. I only had nicknames. The joke in our family is none of the cousins, me being one of them, I've never been called Gina. Do you want to know all my nicknames?
Please. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying this publicly. The one I get called the most is Little Lemon Butter. I don't know why. Lemon Butter or Little Lemon Butter. Little Dinky. Abby, because I was told I was abnormal. So that was a joke.
That's good.
Abby,
my brother and I were Abby and Abner. Gina-la and the baby. And I've never been called Gina in my whole 31 years on this planet.
Hmm.
We're going with 30.
John? Any pet names from the parents growing up?
None I would want to mention now. My mother used to call me a cancer sometimes.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I had carbuncle. There's a story that this is reminding me of.
Grandma called my mom the barnacle.
The barnacle!
Because she was always around my dad when they were dating. God forbid she's around the guy she loves. She called her the barnacle.
Chris, there's a story of what's his name? Outside linebacker on the Denver Broncos, perennial all-star.
Von Miller?
Von Miller. Yeah, Von Miller. Von Miller tattooed his kid's name or his soon-to-be-born kid's name on him and then changed the name.
Oh, my God.
Mm. Yeah.
Whoopsie-daisy.
Why would you do that?
I do not know. Von's a kind of an interesting guy.
He's an eccentric fellow, yeah.
Yeah, but the name... What was his?
It was supposed to be Valor Miller, but instead he changed it to Legacy Miller.
Black guy? So
obviously a modest guy.
Yeah. So now I would argue that I would just
a hell of an edge rusher.
I would leave Valor just alone.
Yeah, it's a good tattoo. It's a good tattoo.
Its own
yeah.
thing.
It could be other. Yeah, maybe he was in the armed forces.
Semper Fi.
Yeah.
Vaughn says that Valor can be his nickname.
Oh, that's nice.
So will he leave the tattoo?
Yeah.
And then he'll go with Legacy.
Ryan,
benevolent.
Yeah, he's going with Legacy.
Is he
going
to get the Legacy tattoo too? If you don't get legacy on your leg, that's on you.
Yeah. How much of a complex is that kid going to have being named Legacy? Like, he's not his own man.
Yeah.
He's just a legacy.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I kind of feel that way with the junior.
Yeah, he said that he had Legacy tatted and Valor will be his nickname.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so he's got Legacy and Valor. Oh, nice.
Big news for an Alzheimer's breakthrough drug. The FDA has approved one, first time in 20 years. It's Biogen's Aduhelm. I don't know. I'm sure we'll see commercials for it soon enough. Believed a slow mental decline from Alzheimer's patients, but had been a little controversial in the medical community because of mixed clinical trial success and results. The FDA said, although Aduhelm data are complicated with respect to its clinical benefits, FDA has determined that there is substantial evidence that it reduces plaque in the brain and that the reduction in these plaques is reasonably likely to predict important benefits to patients. So this could be a really big deal. There's 6 million people in this country that have Alzheimer's.
This is the plot of Deep Blue Sea. We ought to watch out. Super sharks.
Oh, yeah.
Super sharks.
Yeah. Super not great whites. Mako's.
Mako sharks.
Wait, what does this have to do with Alzheimer's?
Saffron Burroughs is trying to cure Alzheimer's. She was giving sharks bigger brains.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But guys, I sit on the board here in Las Vegas at the Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health.
Oh, well.
It's run by the Cleveland Clinic.
I went to a wedding
and I sit on the board of this. This is a huge breakthrough. And Alzheimer's is growing in our society. It's hitting people younger. It's hitting more people all the time. And, you know, this is an important thing. But since we're on the topic, what's important is brain health. And if you really want to avoid these type of illnesses, do some homework about what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat.
Yeah.
And what supplements you can take and what you can't. Because we can offset our likelihood for Alzheimer's greatly if we do these things properly when we're younger.
Well, there's now tell, which makes sense, I guess, of a link between, you know, Klonopin and Xanax and stuff like that and dementia, because you do get very sort of foggy or forgetful. I was told, and I don't do this because I can't be trusted, but I was told one really good exercise to stave off dementia and Alzheimer's is to not look down when you're going down the stairs. Now,
really?
I broke my foot going down the stairs at Katz's.
You can't see your feet. Sorry.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Getting matzo ball soup. So I can't do it. But that's supposed to be a good exercise for people who are, I don't know.
Well, I would argue, and there's a crazy tape, Max Pat, of Biden from about a week and a half ago that said everyone is going to be in a hospital bed with Alzheimer's in a few years.
I hope
did
not.
He just
like 2015.
Him?
It was weird because he hit it. Like, he hit it really hard. He's like, no, like, serious. Everybody. Like, it's a crazy tape. I don't, maybe it was his kicking in. I don't know what it was. You can find it, Chris. But I would imagine there's a physical component and like a mental component. So diet and exercise and supplements and stuff like that. And then there's another part about doing the crossword puzzle every morning, right? Is that something you've learned, John?
You got to work. You got to work the muscle. Absolutely. Yeah. You want to also, you know, the new book I'm working on is called The Pursuit of Conflict. And, you know, the whole premise of the book is that there's not enough conflict in our society. People are scared to stick up for the things that they believe in. Internal conflict has a very bad effect on the brain. So if you have these internal conflicts that stay within your brain and you don't stick up and you don't fight for yourself and you become this submissive person, what happens is the sensors in your brain dull. And there's an effect. So when we stick up for ourselves, the endorphins are more active. So people who fight for what they believe in, people who don't allow conflicts to hold them back, who engage, actually are brain healthier.
Hell yeah.
That's my dad. It is kind of interesting because when you see one of these guys, like an Alan Dershowitz of the world, and you're like, this guy's in his mid-80s.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Maybe early 80s, mid-80s. I don't know what Dershowitz is, 84, 85. And you'll see him on some talk show or something. Yeah. It's like rat-a-tat-tat with the names and the cases and the facts and the boo-boo. And you're like, God, this guy. And anyone who has older parents, first thing that goes is recall of names. Mm. So they're like, well, it's the work with a guy.
Tall guy.
Can't think of his name. Yeah, so that the name recollection goes first. But you see some of these guys, I don't know, Larry King or like one of these guys.
Who Dick Van Dyke, 95.
They were just out working that muscle every day. They do not seem like they've lost a beat.
No, Dick Van Dyke was dancing at the Kennedy Center.
That's right.
I did an interview with Larry King about 10 months ago, which would have been just a few months before he died.
Wow.
Adam, I couldn't get over how sharp he was.
Yeah. Well, is it that different from saying, what if every day from the time you're 25, you did 50 push-ups every morning and you just never missed a day? Well, obviously muscle mass and, you know, bones and all that kind of stuff. But if you just committed to do that every single day, then there'd be an 85-year-old who could do 50 push-ups. Yeah. Or maybe you could do 37 push-ups or 32. But whatever it is, that I think the Alan Dershowitzes and the Larry Kings of the world, I think they just did that every single day. All right.
And good genetics.
Oh, you have genetics, too. Do you have, is that?
So this is, he was visiting Cleveland and he was at the Cuyahoga Community College.
Cuyahoga.
And they asked about Alzheimer's.
You know, if we don't do something about Alzheimer's in America, every single solitary hospital bed that exists in America, as the nurses can tell you, every single one will be occupied in the next 15 years with an Alzheimer's patient.
That's crazy.
Everyone.
If.
That's crazy.
I got that wrong. Like, if there's a million hospital beds, maybe a million people in the next 15 years, well, you know, but not all at the same time, of course.
But here's what I'm most curious about.
Alzheimer's is they're not typically hospital-ridden. You know, most Alzheimer's patients have caretakers or family members who take care of them at home and everything. So that's really, I hate to use this word, but that was a pretty much of an idiotic statement.
And Corn Pop told him to say it.
But here's what I'm curious about. Where does he get that information? He doesn't manufacture it. Like somebody he may have misinterpreted it.
But someone told him a fact at some point. He got it mixed up. And then,
you know, politicians are given facts and then they ingratiate sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Well said.
You know, they create a priority where maybe a priority shouldn't be.
I was kind of talking to Drew about it, though. Like, you have to hear what it sounds like coming out of your mouth, too. Like, every single hospital bed
concern of Joe Biden's.
Is going to be filled. Like, at some point, you have to go. It'd be like if somebody said, how much do you weigh? And I went, 205,000 pounds. At a certain point, I'd go, no, 205 pounds. What did I say? Right.
That's where the Alzheimer's kicks in.
Right.
Maybe.
Speaking of which, this is Inside Baseball. It might be bad pod, and we can totally move on in 2 seconds. But, John, do you know the Spector family?
Which Spector family?
Artie Spector and their son, Todd. I was at a good friend of Todd's, and they're big donors to the Lou Ruvo Center, and they had their wedding there. Sorry,
I have not met them, but I'm guessing they're on our donor list on the wall.
Moving on.
Having a wedding.
We did great work here. If we find a cure for Alzheimer's, it's going to be found here in Las Vegas at the Lou Ruvo Center, which is great.
It's a spectacular center.
Yeah, if anybody's curious, then go to keepmemoryalive.com. There's more information.
Well, and there's a lot of diseases you think of. You know, when I get older, I don't want to have this, I don't want to have that. I would imagine the number one is Alzheimer's or dementia.
Oh, my God.
The scariest.
Family.
Yeah.
And it's tough on your family.
Very.
The caretakers. And
very
difficult. You watch your loved one drift away.
Yes.
Yeah, my friend Philip the Juggler had the early onset stuff, and it just destroyed him. It just destroys you.
How could you not be incredibly volatile and incredibly paranoid and incredibly scared all the time? You don't know who anybody is. You don't trust what they just said.
Yeah.
It's scary.
All right.
That's why we need to pay attention to it when we're young.
Absolutely.
KeepMemoryAlive.org. All right, let's do our last one.
All right.
Louis Anderson coming in here tomorrow or zooming in here tomorrow.
Well, the brotherly love is strong with the Bezos family. Jeff is going to blast off into space next month, and he announced that his brother's going with him. They will be the first people to launch into space aboard a rocket built by his spaceflight company, Blue Origin. The 57-year-old billionaire broke the news on Instagram saying, "Ever since I was 5 years old, I dreamed of traveling to space. On July 20th, I will take the journey with my brother." Jeff and Mark will fly to the edge of space.
Can I say this? When you're worth $200 kajillion dollars, sort of like the two guys who know the recipe for Coke.
Yeah, can't travel together.
You're going to Mars together, an experimental rocket?
Yeah.
There's got to be some grandson with a fucking BB gun just standing next to the launch pad. Like, oh, God, please.
With a laser pointer?
Yes, like, please, ball of flame.
Yes, yeah. But they're not going to be alone. So they're going to go just high enough to get a look at Earth. They're going to parachute down, landing somewhere in West Texas. The other person with them, remember the story of the online auction? Well, mm-hmm. somebody won. And, well, actually, I'm sorry, it still might be going. The current bid is $2.8 million. So the auction winner of that will join the Bezos brothers and go to space.
Wasn't there a boy band, like NSYNC guy or something? Was there some story of somebody from a boy band?
Lance Bass.
Yeah, it was Lance Bass.
Lance Bass. Buying a seat.
Hold on, that was a test. You're gay. You're outside. If you follow Lance that closely. Was he just saying that?
I have no idea. No clue.
You know, we all should have just thrown our hat in the ring, because I'll tell you why. In a world where you kind of virtue signal all the mm-hmm. time, when somebody talks about SpaceX or mm-hmm. experimental or rocket or something, you then just put out a statement saying, I'm in. I'm buying a seat. It'll never happen.
Right.
No one ever followed up. But we'll think two things about you. You're bold yep. and you're rich. Yep. And it will just send it out of the world without saying I'm bold or I'm rich.
Yeah.
I will just put that out there.
That's smart.
And no one's bugging Lance Bass. Hey, what the fuck? We were all excited about you going to outer space. But now what? Where's the follow-up? What's so, Lance going?
So Lance.
So I have a friend, Jared Isaacman, who's going up in a SpaceX flight in September.
Oh.
And he's going to be the first civilian until Bezos determined it. He owns a company called Shift 4 Payments, and they sponsored SpaceX. And he's getting four seats. So he has himself as the captain. He has somebody representing entrepreneurship, who I helped pick as a judge. He has somebody who represents philanthropy and somebody else who represents spirit or some other focus. And the four of them go up in October, and it's supposedly the first civilian flight. So he's at SpaceX now in Southern California training. And I texted him just today, how are things going? And didn't the SpaceX rocket just explode on the way up? How do you feel about that? And he goes, no, you just keep your eye on the mission. You don't think about these things. If you think about it, then you come up with every reason not to go. So I guess their philosophy is just keep your eye focused on the liftoff and nothing else.
I'd go. I want to do that real bad. Absolutely. Space
would
tourism.
You go, Adam?
Space tourism is on the top of most of our bucket lists.
Yeah, I have a theory, which I base it on the first time I felt a girl's titty.
Oh.
Which I was 37.
A scant 10 years ago.
My mom slapped my hand so hard. You grow up as a young man thinking about, when can I squeeze a titty? I'm looking at you, Gina.
You are, yeah.
And you think about it, and you think, what's it going to feel like? What am I going to do? And then at some point, you squeeze a titty, and it feels exactly like you thought it was going to feel. It just, yeah. I say the same. Anyone who's thought about surfing for 25 mm-hmm. years and then actually mm-hmm. got up on a wave, and what was it like? It was exactly how you knew it was going to be like. I feel like space is going to be that way. I feel like if I got up there, I'd go,
yep.
Yeah, this is what this is what it should feel like.
But that's not a letdown.
No, it just doesn't. It doesn't. I don't have the unyielding desire to do it. But I also feel like let them work a couple of the kinks out. And get back to me in 7 to 50 years.
I'll go
years.
On the third flight.
Yeah.
But that's a great point, though. If you know what it's going to be like, then what the hell do you need to do it for?
What's Lance Bass doing?
Okay, so Lance, after NSYNC, he went and did some space training, and he actually moved to Russia, became fluent in Russian, and then
Steven's like, oh,
this is a boyfriend situation. Yeah.
And then he was offered to host a game show in the U.S. that was really popular in Denmark called The Big Mission, where contestants would go through all this training in order to win a seat in the Russian space capsule. But then as he was about to host his game show, they thought, you know, it'd be a lot better if we did a documentary on a celebrity training and being able to do this. So he went through all the training. Even he found out he had a heart condition, got heart surgery and all of it. And then and all of a sudden MTV backed out because of insurance and payment things. And then all these other sponsors backed out because they're like, he might die. And then so after that, he eventually had to give up his seat. So he was really close to getting a seat.
Wow.
Well, I should apologize to Lance Bass, because
this is
bigger commitment than I'd voice.
Than a tweet.
Obviously, he was in.
Right.
He was in. Committed.
Yeah. Yeah, and also never train, because if you train for something, they find out you have a condition at some point.
You don't want to know.
You go in, you have some valve problem. Yeah. That's when they found out he was training, when he's trying to become a Navy SEAL.
Right.
That's when they found out about the issue.
Right.
So don't, any kids listening, don't ever train.
And then you'll be fine.
You'll be fine. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Little Dinky. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
And my grandfather, who was very loving, my step-grandfather called me Cookie. Mm. And nobody else called me anything because they weren't into their kids.
Right.
It's kind of an interesting thing. The more names you have for something, kind of the more into them you are,
terms,
right?
Of endearment. I forgot one. The one I'm still called to this day with lemon butter is Rachel.
Mm.
It's Jewish.
A little less fun.
My grandfather called me Stinky for a while. Apparently, I had a bit of a flatulence problem when I was younger.
You don't look... Oh, wait. You look exactly like a guy with a flatulence problem. But Dawson, do you have one?
Yeah, my grandfather called me Maikulu, which means my ass,
your ass.
In Portuguese.
Yeah. Yeah. In Italian, it's culo, I think. Chris, you have one?
No.
Drawer baby?
Yeah, parents not into you?
No.
Let's just call it what it is. They're not into you.
They're not into me.
I have the same parents. All right. Last but not least, there's a Hyundai Tucson. They questioned everything to create the best Tucson ever. And this is a ton of SUV loaded with innovations inside and out. You learn more at Hyundai.com. All right, Golden Colorado, Buffalo Rose, coming up June 18th, 19th. Couple tickets left, but not too many. Max Pata, Loxy's going to be performing a little pre-cocktail party over there. So come on out and enjoy that. Anchorage, Alaska is going to sell out. And Raleigh, North Carolina, Minneapolis, Royal Oak, Michigan, Kansas City, lots of travel. John can be found on Bar Rescue. New episodes this Sunday, 10 Eastern. And check out the 200th episode on the Paramount Network. And let's not forget about the podcast, the John Taffer Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube as well. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Great to be here, Adam. Be well.
So until next time, Adam Crawford, John Taffer, and Gina Grad, and Bob Ryan, say it. Mahalo.
Oh, well, now I'm shook.
You can follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show, the Ace Man at Adam Carolla. Catch Gina Grad with Teresa Strasser on the podcast Easy Listen, Paul Bryan on the Film Vault, and the rest of us on the Water Cooler. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see the Ace Man at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.